from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, starting Thursday, President Obama will meet with Mexico's leader Enrique Peña Nieto. Immigration, economic issues, and drug cartels are reportedly at the top of the agenda, and we'll discuss all that, as well as U.S.-Mexico relations and what concerns local residents of the Bay Area who have ties to Mexico. Join us for Forum and join in after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. This Thursday, President Obama travels to Mexico for meetings with that nation's president, Enrique Peña Nieto of the PRI, the once all-powerful Institutional Revolutionary Party, now in power once again. And President Peña succeeded former President Felipe Calderón on the 1st of December. Much has already undergone change since the new president took office, and much more appears to be in the works. In this opening Forum hour, we want to focus our attention on Mexico and its relations with the United States, as well as what might be expected from the upcoming talks and how the those who have ties to Mexico are responding. Joining us in studio is Maria Antonieta Mejia, who is managing editor of El Mensajero. It's a Spanish language weekly paper that's put out of San Francisco here. And good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Shannon O'Neill, senior fellow for Latin American Studies with the Council on Foreign Relations and author of a new book called Two Nations Indivisible, Mexico, the United States, and the Road Ahead. Welcome, Shannon O'Neill.
Good morning.
Good morning. We'll also say good morning to Daniel Ayon, who is presently senior fellow at Loyola Marymount University and on the board of U.S.-Mexico Foundation. Welcome, David Ayon.
That's right. It's David. Thanks.
Yeah, sorry about that. And David Ayon, let me begin with you, if I may. And expectations are somewhat high that, as I said earlier, immigration will be discussed and economics will be discussed and certainly drug cartels and the ongoing drug problems. The expectations are that these are just kind of, in some ways, maybe two leaders getting more acquainted or getting better acquainted, isn't it, though?
That's a very big part of it. They have met before. They met in November when, as president-elect, Peña Nieto came to Washington with his team. They've been getting to know each other. There are lots of indications of a certain wariness for a couple of reasons. One, this is the return of the former ruling party that had been there for a long time. And I think, most of all, I think Shannon's work in a very accessible way explains how the former regime had allowed for the growth and the infiltration and the expansion of criminality, of the drug smuggling operations that have become generalized criminal operations. So there is some, at least, concern about that as well. Given the cost of the drug war, that in itself has created pressure, a significant degree of political pressure for a change in emphasis, at least, if not of strategy. And then there's the constant tendency that when a new regime comes in, a new administration comes in, even if it's up from the same party, that it distinguishes it from the previous regime. And the previous administration, the Calderón administration, is so closely associated with security cooperation with the United States, exemplified by this massive Washington Post article that came out over the weekend. I mean, the detail is just almost mind-boggling. This is probably the closest cooperative relationship we have with a country that's not a formal military ally.
Yeah, I saw the Washington Post article, and the fact of the matter is the U.S. played a major role in drug cartel intelligence, sending drones, getting space allowed by the Calderón administration, given entree. I mean, really, just so many things that involved cooperation between the two governments. And now there seems to be less of an emphasis on going after the drug cartels. At least that's what some are ascribing to, for example, murders going down 14% and the old PRI maybe even resurfacing in some ways, suggestions that, well, they don't perhaps care as much as Calderón.
That's right. And I would, again, echo what Shannon says in her new book. The OPRI really never went away in much of the country. You know, the OPRI controls the majority of the states in Mexico. Governors became only more important and powerful over the last 12 years with a PAN president in Mexico City. So for the reasons that I've mentioned, there's the usual distancing from previous policies. In this case, a policy that has grown increasingly unpopular in Mexico, given the cost, given the collateral damage. And besides that, there's a just not clear. Well, actually, it's rather clear. This new administration wants to emphasize something else, which is most of all the sort of reforms that it's pushing through. The economic story, which is pretty positive, that's what it wants to change Mexico's image and really wants to push aside the image of the drug war altogether.
Well, in fact, Shannon O'Neill, there's a whole reform agenda coming from President Peña Nieto.
There is. I mean, you look at what's happened just over the last 4 or 5 months since this administration has come into power, and you see a very cohesive, a very strategic, and very ambitious reform agenda on the economic side. So you saw right before he came in, he worked with the previous administration to pass a labor reform. Then they passed, or they came out in the first couple days of his administration with a pact for Mexico, which was an agreement with the other two main parties on some 90-some points of where Mexico needs to go, the things that need to change. They passed a constitutional reform to the education system. They have a telecommunications reform that should open up that area that's about to go through the Congress. And they've been talking repeatedly about an energy reform, a financial reform, and a tax reform, all within this first year. So you see a very, very ambitious agenda on this economic side just in the first few months.
Well, actually, can we pause for a moment and talk about the education reforms? Because it's caused violent protests, and he's essentially planning to overhaul the whole system.
It is. It's interesting in Mexico. It's hard to believe, but, you know, until recently, if you were, say, the governor of a state or the mayor of a town, and you wanted to find out actually how many teachers were employed in a school, just the number and then what they earned as a salary, you couldn't get that information. That was really controlled by the union, not by the government, even though the government was paying those salaries and funding the schooling system. So that's just one example of some of the dysfunction in Mexico's education system. And what we've seen is a set of reforms at a national level, at a constitutional level, that should make the system more accountable, the monies that go into it more accountable, and begin things like testing teachers for performance, for their knowledge of the subject and the like. The challenge now is while you passed it at a constitutional level, it has to be then implemented at the state and local level. And so how these big principles and changes will be implemented, how exactly, say, testing of teachers will happen and what will happen if they don't pass the test, and like, that's what's happening now. And that's the battle that you're seeing in some states on the street with teachers pushing back on how actually this reform will be implemented.
Yeah, there's also, at least a plan to consolidate municipal police forces. Will that, the hopes, I guess, that would diminish the widespread and pervasive corruption?
I mean, this is one of the other issues on the table. And Mexico has over 2,000 different police forces. You know, some are big and national or in big cities, and then others are small, you know, half a dozen officers. And particularly at that local level, you've seen a real lack of training, a real lack of equipment, and often you're seeing corruption at that level. And so the hope is by consolidating forces, by centralizing some of it, you'll be able to train them better, you'll be able to equip them better, and then hopefully build more professional police forces.
So lots of reform in the works, and let me bring Marcelo Davison Aviles into this. Let me bring Maria Antonieta Mejia, who's here with us in the studio, who's managing editor of El Mensajero, which is a Spanish-language weekly newspaper published here in San Francisco. And there is, I've seen a poll, only 30% of those with ties to Mexico think that something positive or productive is going to come out of these meetings. That seems to be a significantly low number. Why is that?
Yes, I guess Mexicans are skeptic, and they are just so used to not real changes in government.
Is that also because it's the PRI again?
I suppose so. You know, the fact that the PRI lasted over 70 years in power and then went away and came back so, you know, kind of soon, I would say that give Mexicans like a lot of skepticism out of this, visit. Even though visits of American presidents to Mexico have always been taken, you know, with a lot of importance and you know, they seem to have a significant value for the Mexicans. But I don't believe that it's that any Mexican would think that this visit is going to change like any major aspects of Mexico.
Well, we've got an immigration bill, and certainly there's going to be talk between the two heads of state about immigration reform. Is there more hope that something actually will be brought to fruition?
I believe immigration would be a big subject and one that would be very close looked by Mexicans. And also, I think for the Mexican government, immigration and immigration reform is an issue that they've been following pretty closely, and they, of course, would like to be passed in the United States. But there's nothing that the Mexican government can do about it, even though if it passes, it'll be sold as like, you know, that it was related to the efforts of the Mexican government, although we know that it doesn't really have, you know, much a place, you know, to say anything, the Mexican government. As much as they wanted immigration reform to pass, they don't have any saying on whatever it happens.
Perhaps some of the skepticism you alluded to may be tied to the fact that a weakened down gun control bill didn't even get through the Senate. What happened in Boston has been tied unfairly by many people's lights to immigration. I mean, these are forces working against, as people see it, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it just seems that every time that immigration reform is close or like is in the talks, something huge happens, like 9/11 attacks and now the Boston explosions. And it's really sad, no? For one side to see that, you know, usually the attention will be brought to like border issues, be very skeptical of the fact that these people in the bombing attacks in Boston are immigrants from different countries in origin, you know, brings attention to the immigration issue again. So, yeah, that will be an issue that that it will affect, I suppose, the talks.
James Moran, who's a Democrat from Virginia, and Ted Rowe, Republican from Texas, have said that President Obama, in fact, they're pressing President Obama to press on human rights in Mexico. Is there any expectation that something will come out of that?
Well, human rights have been a pretty big issue because the fact that the last presidency from Felipe Calderón brought the military into the fight against drug cartels brought also a lot of complaints from like human rights issues. And now there's another issue beyond the just the human rights general issue. And it's the fact that many journalists, too, are dying, have died, you know, in the last government, and they're still dying. It just over this past weekend, there was a big concentration in one of the Mexican states where drug trafficking and violence related to that has been really bad, which is Veracruz. So human rights issues are going to be, I think, or should be in the agenda for talks.
And again, Maria Antonieta Mejia is here with us in studio, managing editor of El Mensajero. And David Ayon is a senior fellow at Loyola Marymount and also on the board of the U.S.-Mexico Foundation. Let's talk economics with you, David Ayon. But first of all, U.S. is spending $1.9 billion since 2007 in security assistance. And now that we see less emphasis on security, or at least less emphasis on the United States working in tandem with Mexico, is that going to diminish?
It may well, but I wouldn't overstress the quantity of the Mérida initiative. It's significant, but actually, as it unfolded, there were a lot of obstacles placed. The assistance was slow coming. Most of it was in kind. Most of it equipment. I think what's really of strategic value, of greater strategic value in the drug war, is the intelligence sharing and the intimate cooperation and training even in a number of ways of Mexican officials and the involvement of U.S. officials, the DEA. It really came back. This is another aspect of this, by the way. The DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, really had to practically pull out of Mexico under the previous PRI governments, and it came back in a major way under the PAN, the PAN governments since Fox and Calderon. And I think there's going to be pressure probably to scale that back. I don't think that the top level Mexican authorities are themselves really prickly nationalists. That's not what motivates them. But nevertheless, the appeal of the party, the PRI party, and its coalition has more nationalist elements in it, and so that is where I think it's going to be scaled back in a way that probably does matter strategically, such as going after the drug kingpins. I mean, that strategy is basically being phased out, if not dropped altogether.
But on the economic side, and actually, let me go to you on this, Shannon O'Neill. There's talk about a rising middle class in Mexico. There's talk about over $500 billion in trade, which will be part of the talking that's going on between President Obama and President Peña Nieto, and more democracy, more stable economy, and less reason even to emigrate to the United States because of the economy that's faltering here and perhaps fewer jobs.
Yeah, we've seen a shift in the last couple of years, and particularly in immigration flows from Mexico, which have reached, you know, what they call a net zero, so a very similar number coming in as going out. And that is in part because of economic changes. Obviously, we've had a rough couple of years on this side of the border, the U.S. side of the border. But particularly the last couple of years, we've seen improvements on the Mexican side. And as you say, the rise of a middle class. And this is something very new for Mexico in the last 15 or 20 years, where this middle is roughly half of the population now. And so what that means is there's more disposable income. So, you know, everybody has a cell phone, a television, a refrigerator. Half of the people have their own cars. Over half live in their own houses. This is something quite different from Mexico. And it's changing the way they think about their country, but it's also changing the relationships with the United States on the economic side. And this is, it's not just the $500 billion worth of goods that goes back and forth. That's really important. What's important is that the 20-plus years since NAFTA, when this trade has exploded, it's changed the calculations and the way that companies do things. And so thousands and thousands and thousands of companies now operate on both sides of the border. And sort of one telling statistic of this is when something comes in made from Mexico, i.e., you know, imported from Mexico, on average, almost 40% of that was actually made by U.S. workers on the U.S. side of the border. And if you compare that to China or Brazil or the European Union, it's less than 4%. So really what's going back and forth across the U.S.-Mexico border is pieces and parts. It's not finished goods. And so workers and companies on both sides of the border, they depend on the other side. And that is something new. And that's what's going to be on the agenda for these two presidents, is how do we keep that going and improve it? Because companies and workers on both sides of the border now depend on it.
Yeah, well, they're also going to be talking about private sector interests, I imagine, and also, the whole question of just how to sustain and get new development in Mexico. And let me go back, if I may, to Maria Antonieta Meija. There's, I just wonder what your sense is, if you've taken the pulse of Mexican-Americans here in the Bay Area, or those who are tied to Mexico, do they feel that NAFTA has in some been a positive as far as Mexico-American relations?
Well, it depends who you ask. You know, there is many people that's a critic of NAFTA. There's the sense that NAFTA has really affected the local production in Mexico, like the maíz. Some people say that it hasn't really been beneficial as much for Mexico as for the United States. And for many reasons, the United States has been able to just move his production to Mexico and inundated with maybe a product that is not as good. And it has not been beneficial for the local farmers in that sense, no? For especially the campesinos in Mexico. So if you ask maybe for the major investors people that have been just making money out of, the benefits that give you the NAFTA agreement, then there might be just in the positive side. But there are many critics of NAFTA.
Well, let me actually at this point invite those of you listening to join this discussion. If you have questions or comments about the upcoming trip that President Obama is making to Mexico to meet with President Peña Nieto, or If you simply would like to lend your voice to this conversation or your ideas, we welcome you. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and that's toll-free from anywhere, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, go to our Facebook page or tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQEDForum. At this point, I want to bring Marcela Davison Aviles into the conversation, president of the Mexican Heritage Corporation, and we welcome you to the forum. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for inviting me.
Glad to have you. And from your perspective, a lot of hope attached to this, or maybe looking at it skeptically? What's your perspective?
Well, I think the community is looking at it with a lot of hope, but I would agree with Maria that there also is very recently a little bit of concern relative to, you know, how are recent events going to impact the conversations over immigration. And that journey has been a very long journey for those of us in the community here in the States. And very recently, there has been a lot of hope with respect to reform. And so I believe that, you know, everyone is looking to these conversations with concern, but with hope that all of the work and the advocacy and the finding of common ground that seems to be the case will not be unraveled, and that the threads of this narrative will be taken up by the two presidents and hopefully brought to a successful conclusion.
Their successful conclusion would be what? Would be more of a partnership between the two nations as opposed to seeing Mexico as a problem?
Oh, certainly. I think that, you know, there has been a lot of concern and candidly frustration over, I believe, this administration's puzzling attitude towards our community with respect to deportations, for example. And so I think there's a desire and a hope that the administrations can come together and have a colloquy in which that is discarded, and really the common ground that's really characterized by the border itself and by the territory itself, that's a mingling of heritage between the United States and Mexico, can really inform a more thoughtful discourse that results in a deeper partnership.
Well, common ground might be interpreted not only economically and vis-a-vis immigration, but also in terms of drug enforcement, and there seems to be a growing chasm there, doesn't there?
Well, certainly, you know, as your guests have pointed out, there's a new administration, and I think that the observation in our community is to see what is going to happen with the new administration in Mexico, and really how is that conversation going to pan out relative to, you know, the previous partnership on the issue of drug enforcement. Certainly the issue of safety in Mexico on both sides of the border is paramount, as is immigration, as is the issue of jobs.
Again, Marcela Davison Aviles is president of Mexican Heritage Corporation in San Jose, and we're coming up on a break, but you can join us. In fact, we welcome your calls and emails. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, as we talk about President Obama's forthcoming visit to Mexico on Thursday to meet with Mexico's leader, Enrique Peña Nieto, and what's up? Immigration, economic issues, drug cartels, reportedly top of the agenda. Feel free to join us, U.S.-Mexico relations, and how are Bay Area natives responding to this, or those natives of Mexico, or those who have ties to Mexico? Join us by email, forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Beginning this Thursday, President Obama will be meeting with Mexico's leader, Enrique Peña Nieto, and they'll be talking about, among other things, immigration, economic issues, and drug cartels. That certainly tops the agenda, and we're talking about U.S.-Mexico relations and concerns that Mexicans in the Bay Area and beyond have, and you can certainly lend your voice to this conversation or raise any questions and concerns about U.S.-Mexican relations. And indeed, we'd like to hear from you. This part of the hour is certainly devoted to your calls and emails. Our toll-free number again, 866-733-6786. Our email address, forum@kqed.org. And you can join us on our website, kqed.org/forum. Simply click on this segment or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @KQED Forum. Talking with Shannon O'Neill, Senior Fellow for Latin American Studies with the Council on Foreign Relations and author of Two Nations Indivisible, Mexico and the United States and the Road Ahead. With David Ayon, who's a Senior Fellow at Loyola Marymount University and on the board of the U.S.-Mexico Foundation. And here in studio with us, Maria Antonieta Mejia, who is Managing Editor of El Mensajero, the Spanish language weekly paper that's published here in San Francisco. We also spoke earlier on with Marcela Davison Aviles, president of the Mexican Heritage Foundation, or Corporation, excuse me. And let me go to your calls, and let's not tarry here. Abraham is first caller up. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Hi, Shannon, and hi, Maria Antonieta.
Hello.
My question is this. Why should I believe, as a Mexican immigrant, that something will come up, something good will come up from the meeting between Enrique Peña Nieto and Obama, when our elected Mexican president has proven that he is not smarter than a fifth grade student? And I will take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, Maria, he did say that, didn't he?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say, I mean, I would agree with people that wouldn't expect a lot from this meeting. And you mentioned something really interesting. Before Enrique Peña Nieto took power, he had he's had a lot of incidents where he has shown
said scandals,
that,
really.
That he's not really smart. He's been to a book fair once where he was addressed by journalists, and he was asked what were the main books that he had read, and he couldn't even mention one. And, you know, he's had, like, really bad handling of things.
Of course, some people have said the same kinds of things about George W. Bush.
You exactly.
Know, he wasn't a reader, and he was, you know, not all that swift when it came to intelligence
exactly.
and so forth. But he governed this country as chief executive for 8 years.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, I don't know what will come out of these conversations and if Mexicans should be hopeful. You know, of course, we are all hopeful that Mexico improves in terms of security. We all want to see violence in a decreased level.
Already has, though, hasn't it? 14% under Peña Nieto.
It has, but it really hasn't that much. I have some figures that I was reviewing before coming, and till March, there's still over 3,000 deaths in Mexico related to drug trafficking. So you don't see like so big of a change already. Of course, we have to be fair and say that it hasn't. I mean, he hasn't had all that time to prove anything that he can change.
Can I give you another figure that's alarming?
Yes,
over 40%
of
Mexicans say they or a family member were victims over the past year.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I mean, things honestly have not really, and you're not expecting, like, in a few months to change completely. But at least we would wanted to see more action. And I would insist in the part of journalists, because, of course, that's where I work. And Mexico being one of the most dangerous countries in the world to exercise journalism, to me, that's just, like, something that 10 years ago or 15 years ago, I would have never thought of Mexico.
David Ayon, you wanted to add something here.
Yeah. I think it may not be entirely fair or accurate to say that Peña Nieto is not smart. What he is, he gives a lot of these signs of being a true policy wonk and a politician. And he lives for that purpose. He lives in a world of talk, of briefings, of memos. He's not a cultured man, granted. And you've had cultured presidents and people around Mexican presidents before. He's really the new face of the technocratic group or faction that emerged basically in the 1980s. Unlike them, though, he didn't come and get a PhD in economics in the United States, and maybe he wouldn't be capable of that. He's not at that level. But he really shows a grasp and even a passion. I think he really is a policy wonk. But on the cultural level, his wife is a soap opera star. He has not immersed himself. And, you know, you could say absolutely. You could say that about Vicente Fox, who mistook, got wrong the names of major cultural figures like the author Borges from Argentina. These are not cultured men. But I think that Peña Nieto is politically smarter and much more of a policy wonk than, say, Vicente Fox was.
I'm having the strange deja vu here. I remember almost a similar assessment of George W. Bush on this program by Newt Gingrich. It almost sounds like it's duplicating that. But let me get another caller on. And, Jim, that's you. Good morning.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Okay.
I have a question about for your guest about the media and the PRI. And the recent kind of reforms or things that they've been trying to do to limit the media's coverage of the drug war, such as denying freedom of information requests and not allowing information about cartel members that are arrested or killed. And just wanted to see what your guests were thoughts about that.
Yeah, Maria, this gets back to what you were saying before. Journalists being hindered, yeah.
Yes, I mean, the numbers, and I was just mentioning a protest that was not only happening in Veracruz, but also in Mexico City and other cities in Mexico, where journalists took on the streets to ask for more security. And it all happened because a year ago, there was a major case of a journalist from a major magazine, Proceso, that was murdered. And they captured a supposed person that was responsible for the killing. And the charge was robbery. So, you know, even when authorities apprehend supposed responsible people for the killings, the people is not satisfied because, honestly, there's doubts in the Mexican justice that things are handling or investigations are being handled the best way that could be done. And also, you were mentioning before about a change from the past administration to this one in terms of Peña Nieto and the PRI do not want to talk as much about drug trafficking. And there's a change of not calling a war against drugs. But I would say that not because you don't talk about it, it's not happening. We still have a lot of violence. And also, this past weekend in the state of Michoacán, we saw, again, confrontations related to drug trafficking. So there's still things happening. And the press, in many times, is afraid to just cover these type of events because, you know, journalists are dying.
There was also protests in Michoacán about the education overhaul that I alluded to earlier. They were holding up buses and trucks, and there was a strike going on.
And there's still in Mexico City, in the major university, a big protest about education, too.
And Shannon O'Neill, I guess one of the big questions, and I don't know if this will come up between the talks between President Obama and President Peña Nieto, but there has been, as we noted, a kind of advancement of the middle class, and things are a bit economically upticking in Mexico. There's strict banking regulations, for example, that have come into play that many are more optimistic about. But the real question is how to get Mexicans themselves to stay and invest in and start businesses there, isn't it?
Right, we've seen, I mean, many of Mexico's best and brightest, half of Mexico's PhD holders, about 20-25% of those with college degrees, they've all left and they've come to the United States and they've invested their significant skills and money and talent here in the United States. And even those who come to the United States who have lower degrees of education, many of them are the risk takers, right? The entrepreneurs who are willing to go to a foreign country, learn a new language, and make their way elsewhere. And so a real challenge for Mexico is to keep that wealth, that human capital, you know, in Mexico. You know, we're starting to see a shift, and in part there is this net zero migration, which means many, many more are staying at home. The other thing you've seen in Mexico over the last couple of decades is a huge increase in the number of years that kids stay in school. So it's almost doubled over the last 20-plus years. Some will question, particularly in the public school system, if they're getting their money's worth, if it's worth their time, because These schools are weak, or many of them are quite weak. But you're starting to see more and more investment in education, and not just in the secondary level, but more and more, especially young people going to college, moving on into degrees above the high school level. And that is something that's vital for Mexico's future. One, in keeping those people there and having them invest their talent in Mexico's economy. But also, if you think about the 21st century for all countries, how are you going to compete in this new world? What has to be, if you want to, you know, scale those socioeconomic ladder, if you want to earn more and more money, it has to be something that involves education in your brain. It can't just be manual labor anymore. And so it's a challenge for everywhere, and Mexico's trying to take it on. It's slow. It should be faster. There's many critiques, but they are starting to make those steps.
Shannon O'Neill, again, is Senior Fellow for Latin American Studies with the Council on Foreign Relations, author of Two Nations Indivisible, Mexico, the United States, and the Road Ahead. Some web comments are coming in, sort of put out the question, what would you want President Obama and President Peña Nieto to talk about? And you can put your own web comment here by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment. Wayne says, I hope Obama will apologize for Eric Holder's massively criminal Fast and Furious operation, and that Obama will have the respect and humility to kneel down and beg Peña Nieto not to go to the International Criminal Court to have Holder extradited for prosecution as he deserves to be. Strong opinion, to be sure. And here's another one. Kurt says, tell him, that is Peña Nieto, to stop his people invading the United States. As I said, you may want to lend your voice to this. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. Let me go to your calls, and let's bring Sarah on. Sarah, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I was actually born in Mexico City. I've got American parents, but because of NAFTA, I was able to keep dual citizenship. I've traveled all over Mexico, lived there many years, and I think it's such a magical place. But the one thing about it that really kind of frustrates me is just the intense amount of corruption. And my hope is that when Obama goes to Mexico to speak with Peña Nieto, that he tries to encourage him to make the police force a less corrupt place and to help the police to do more honest work. Because when I've been there, you know, I've seen things as small as, you know, police pulling people over and just taking their money instead of taking them in. And I do believe that they're very involved in the drug war. And I feel that if the police in Mexico were compensated better and acknowledged and given, you know, more, you know, health insurance and all of that, that they would become a more honest force and there would be a lot less corruption.
David Ayona, excuse me, let me get you to comment on that. I mean, there's been a sense that the police have been involved in all kinds of corrupt practices and the corruption's ubiquitous. What about better conditions for the police or, for that matter, the plan to consolidate municipal police forces?
Yes, that's part of the plan, the reforms, actually. Calderón was pursuing those reforms. Peña Nieto is pursuing those reforms. Peña Nieto is pursuing them in a different way. He's consolidating a lot more power back again in what we tend to call the Ministry of Interior, but it's not like our Ministry of Interior. It's really the Ministry of Government, or the Internal Office, as they call it in Britain, that handles domestic political management and relations between the different levels of government, and is now going to have responsibility for internal security again, which had been moved away into a separate department under Vicente Fox. So there, you're seeing, to a certain degree, a certain recentralization of power. It's going to be a pretty good question. Does this help advance the reforms that need to be made and the cleanup that needs to be made, the combat against corruption? I mean, it just takes so many forms. The bribing of local officials, that's continued in
forgive
local...
me, it's embedded, really, isn't it?
Yes, it actually goes back centuries.
Yeah.
And it's something that has not been eliminated when an opposition party takes over a state or a local government. It's still very much of a problem.
And a listener, Bob, writes, as Mexico very gradually shifts to a form of meritocracy and democracy, the United States is shifting away from that to third world values, more money and power to fewer and fewer, wealth to the connected, not to the competent. Okay, a lot of opinions here. Here's Claudia who says, I'm a Mexican immigrant living in the Bay Area for the past 22 years. My biggest concern is the rampant violence in my home state of Michoacan. Yesterday at 5 a.m., 20 trucks of Los Caballeros Templeros, or Knight Templars, showed up in my family's village and had a confrontation with the community police. My family is under a great deal of stress and fled their homes yesterday evening when they learned that 28 trucks of the Knight Templars were on their way back to the village. There's also a blockade from the same cartel preventing food from getting to the region. This is cruel. Meanwhile, the army watches and says they don't have orders to do anything about this terrorism, is what she calls it here. Maria Antonieta Meijer?
Well, that's, you know, that's what I was telling you. Sometimes when you see these meetings between presidents, as we're going to see President Obama and President of Mexico, Peña Nieto, we're going to hear a lot of the great things that are happening in Mexico and the United States. But then there's still a country in some states that this is happening. And it's true. And even though authorities in the Mexican government or even abroad, no, like in the Mexican consulates here, do not want you as a journalist to talk about all the bad and kind of tell you that it's just responsibility of, as a communicator to talk also about the good. And I agree with the previous caller that said that Mexico is a magical place. Of course, it is a magical place that is in our hearts and everything, but these things are happening. And one thing that goes to the relationship between Mexico and the United States is this. It is a historic relationship. And in Mexico, some authorities blame the United States in the drug trafficking problem because the consumption, the main consumption, comes from the United States. And the problem with the violence and that, most of the weapons comes from the United States. So in many of the things that will happen and that have been happening, United States have responsibilities too. So that would be some part of this conversation that maybe Mr. Obama might want to bring up, but I don't know if I would see that.
Well, the last email talked about the Knight Templars, and we've been talking about the violence associated with the overhaul of the education system. There's a lot of violence not only in Michoacan, which we spoke about in both instances, but in Guerrero now. There have been riots and violence, and Mexico City Boulevard was shut down. I mean, unfortunately, it continues. A listener tweets, what about the illegitimacy of Peña Nieto's election? Well, I knew somebody might bring that up. David Ayon?
You know, it's gotten very, very difficult to actually steal a presidential election in Mexico. Those reforms, the creation of the Federal Electoral Institute, the ways in which elections used to be stolen by the former ruling party, there's so many obstacles to that. The sort of national voter ID card with 9 or 10 or 13 ways of making it really tamper-proof, the way in which there's a massive mobilization of civilians to oversee the election, to count the votes. What you can say is that there you can question the fairness of Mexican elections, even today. But nevertheless, you saw two straight elections that were won by the opposition party. There's one party, one opposition party, the one that complains the most is the one that hasn't won, the left opposition party, the PRD. And they feel that they were defrauded, or at least the candidate feels like he was defrauded in 2000 and in 2006. Same candidate both times. And in 2006 and in 2012, excuse me. There's not many external observers that support that contention. Peña Nieto actually won with an ample margin. It was a very different case in 2006, in which it was like a thinnest possible margin that elected Calderón. I don't think that you can seriously say that this was in a stolen election.
I think, I saw Maria Antonieta sort of jerk her head back when you said that things have gotten much better and more democratic elections. You don't agree, Maria?
Yeah, I think that it's much more sophisticated now. And I would say, I would agree
it
that...
It being the corruption and...
The corruption and the way to... Maybe not to say that it was stolen, but you can start before the election, doing things that you shouldn't be doing. And one thing that it's clear in Mexico is that if you have the main television network working with you, as Peña Nieto did, which is Televisa, in such a big level, maybe you're going to be, it's going to be easier for you to win this election.
And that wasn't only because his wife was a TV soap opera star.
No, well, that might have helped.
Let me bring another caller on here, and that's Paola. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. So what I would like to see discussed between Peña Nieto and Obama is the fact that under the Obama administration, more than 2 million people have deported. Many of them are children, people who may have not been born in the United States but have been raised in the United States and who are culturally American. And the only thing that ties into Mexico is the fact they were born there. My other issue is that a lot of children have, U.S. citizen children, have been deported along with their undocumented parents. And these children, the U.S. citizens and the children who are culturalized as Americans, go into Mexico into a school system that is under-educating them, which is right now going under major changes. Their schooling is limited. And we're taking people who have been great people for our nation here, hard workers, determined to make a better life for themselves, and throwing them back into a system that isn't there for them, and that's why they left.
Paola,
that's my comment.
Yeah, no, I thank you for that comment. In fact, let me go to Shannon O'Neill. Shannon O'Neill, the president has spoken in favor of the DREAM Act and seems to be very sympathetic where these children are concerned, who are for all practical purposes American, though their parents may be undocumented. But the caller is absolutely right. The deportations have increased under Obama. Is this going to be grist for the topic between the two leaders, do you think?
You know, immigration reform broadly is going to be part of the topic, and particularly in the meetings that happen after the summit, sort of what happens on May 3rd and after between the different ministries and the undersecretaries and the like, this will be a big issue. And you know, the reality today is that 5 million American citizens, mostly kids, have one or more parents that are undocumented. And so these people are here not just to work, but mainly because they have these ties, these familial ties. They're part of the United States. But I would say this. I am cautiously optimistic on a comprehensive immigration reform in the United States today, because I think there are sort of three things that are fundamentally different than there were the last time around in 2007 when these efforts fail. And one is, as we've been talking about, this demographic shift from Mexico. You're not seeing as many people come in, so it lightens a little bit the rhetoric and the tensions behind some of the compromise that's needed. The second factor is the political heft that we saw last November of the Latino demographic, which is majority Mexican-American. So some of that has changed, too, and you see both parties trying to figure out how to appeal to this demographic.
Now you see people like Mario Rubio suddenly getting religion on immigration.
Exactly, and many others in his party, right, have also come out. And then finally, I think a big change to recognize here is that unlike 2007, you've seen business, the private sector in the United States, actually come to the table and make demands. And they were really absent back then. But today you see high-tech people, so San Francisco companies, Facebook and others there, but also the traditional business, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, this time around has come to the table and also made a compromise with the AFL-CIO and the other labor unions. And that's something very different. And many people think that is part of what derailed it in 2007. So whether it's for the Dreamers, whether it's for all these different groups, I'm cautiously optimistic that something can happen here, because I think the political dynamics in the U.S. have changed.
Well, let me thank Paola for her call and go right to another caller. Brian, thanks for waiting. Join us on Forum. Good morning.
Yes, thank you. My question is that the emerging legal cannabis industry in the United States is a win-win situation that's creating a lot of good jobs, even union jobs, much-needed revenue for our communities, and even more safety through regulation. So how will this affect the conversation between the presidents and the constituencies that they represent, in that the legal cannabis will create more safety for Mexico and the people of the United States, but it'll be a losing thing for the criminal industrial complex and the Mexican cartels? So the DEA and the Mexican cartels will be losing revenue. And,
well, the cartels have been sending a lot of marijuana across the border. Of course, as we heard just a moment ago from Maria Antonieta Mejia, there's great consumption desire here and need here. But actually, let me get some thoughts from you, David Ayon, on this. legalization and medical marijuana has seen more, shall we say, intervention, because that's really what it is, by the Obama administration, again, than it did previous administration.
That's right. You know, this is a very complicated issue with mixed implications for our relationship with Mexico and for Mexico itself. There's even concern in many quarters in Mexico that you have local jurisdictions in the United States. Not that I'm criticizing them, but you have states that are going in this direction. That complicates the states and local jurisdictions' relationship with the feds, with our federal government, which does not view this approvingly. It complicates the relationship with Mexico, where they're saying, you know, the drug war has cost scores of thousands of lives, and in your country, people are opting for legalization or for medical marijuana. One of the things that you just touched on, Michael, is really important. The drug cartels are arguably, to a significant degree, some of them more than others, have moved beyond simply being drug smuggling operations. And to the extent to which drug smuggling declines as a source of revenue for them, they're going to keep fighting for that. But they have increasingly turned into territorially based criminal organizations that engage, they've been doing this a lot, they engage in kidnapping, extortion. In vast swaths of Mexico, you have to pay protection money. Not just businesses, even residences, people in their homes have to pay protection money to these gangs. They're probably only going to do more of that to the extent to which they lose revenue, which is not to say, you know, we shouldn't follow our own policies, not to say that we shouldn't rethink the effectiveness of prohibition and a war on drugs, but that the consequences are actually very complicated and very mixed.
Well, that's going to have to bring it to a close, and we'll end there. I want to thank all of our guests. Thanks to David Ayon, who, again, is senior fellow at Loyola Marymount and on the board of the U.S.-Mexico Foundation. Thanks to Shannon O'Neill, senior fellow for Latin American Studies and the Council on Foreign Relations. Her book, Two Nations Indivisible, Mexico, the United States, and the Road Ahead. And thanks to Maria Antoineta Mejia, who's here with us in studio, managing editor of El Mensajero, a Spanish weekly paper here in San Francisco. And we also spoke with Marcelo Davison Aviles, president of the Mexican Heritage Corporation in San Jose. And thanks to you, our listeners, and thanks to our producers, Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Engineer is Danny Bringer, engagement producer Amanda Stupai, senior editor Dan Zoll, and executive producer Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.